Thank you, Dave Brubeck. That was Dave Brubeck and his quartet with the jazz classic, Take Five. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It's Friday, November the 23rd, the day after Thanksgiving. I hope you had a good one. I had a very good one. I slept all day. Well, we pick up from where we left off with each other. On Wednesday, we were talking about Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton and some very serious questions that should be raised about her accountability in this Benghazi situation. We'll get into that very shortly. But I thought we would just kind of mention and talk a bit about Jesse Jackson Jr. As you know, you might know by now that the congressman from Chicago's 2nd District surfaced on Wednesday after more than 5 months of absence from Congress, only to announce that he was throwing in the towel. He was going to be resigning. And he cited health reasons and personal reasons. The health reasons having to do, he says, with bipolar disorder, for which he has been treated and is still being treated, and for the personal reasons, really having to do with some legal matters that confront him now. I'll just read a bit from his resignation letter, and it goes as follows. He says, and I'm excerpting here, "For 17 years, I have given 100% of my time, energy, and life to public service. However, over the past several months, as my health has deteriorated, my ability to serve the constituents of my district has continued to diminish. Against the recommendations of my doctors, I had hoped and tried to return to Washington and continue working on the issues that matter most to the people of the 2nd District. I know now that will not be possible. The constituents of the 2nd District reserve a full-time legislator in Washington, something I cannot be for the foreseeable future. My health issues and treatment regimen have been incompatible with service in the House of Representatives. Therefore, it is with great regret that I hereby resign as a member of the United States House of Representatives, effective today," that's Wednesday, "in order to focus on restoring my health. During this journey, I have made my fair share of mistakes. I am aware of the ongoing federal investigation into my activities, and I'm doing my best to address the situation responsibly, cooperate with the investigators, and accept responsibility for my mistakes, for they are my mistakes and mine alone. None of us is immune from our share of shortcomings or human frailties, and I pray that I will be remembered for what I did right. It has been a profound honor to serve the constituents of Illinois' 2nd Congressional District, and I thank them for their patience, their words of support and prayers during what has been and what will continue to be a very trying time for me and my family." That was the letter that he submitted, his letter of resignation. Well, when I last talked about Jesse Jackson Jr. in the context of black leadership that is falling quite short of expectations, and the extraordinary thing that he was elected re-elected to a 10th term in Congress, which is impressive. It means that the constituency feels particularly simpatico with this particular now former congressman. But of course, he made it known that he had this bipolar disorder just about the time that he disappeared. And we know now that there are certain things that are happening legally there. For one thing, it is about, and the last paragraph that I just read gave a clue, he's actually negotiating, his lawyers are, to find some kind of terms that he could live with. And among them, I'm told, is that he's trying to negotiate a plea that would allow him to resign for health reasons, for health reasons. I think that might be a twofold purpose. One, it means that he also is an attorney, by the way, so it may have to do with no challenge to his license, or it may be that he leaves open the possibility that he could run again for some office or the other. They're also negotiating about jail time for the alleged misuse of funds. So that is in the works. They're negotiating whether he and how he will repay funds that allegedly were used for personal purposes. And they're negotiating allegedly around his request to retain his congressional pension. And it's not just him, it's his wife also, who's now part of the investigation. His wife, Sandy Jackson, is an elected official in Chicago. She represents, as an alderman, the 7th Ward. And she, too, is enmeshed in this federal investigation being conducted by the FBI. And she, too, has some issues in her own district in Chicago, where she is regarded, I don't know what the truth of it is, but she's widely regarded as an absentee legislator who allegedly does not live in the district anymore, but lives in Washington, D.C. So Jesse Jackson Jr. has his hands full, and I could understand why he would feel very pressured, and I could understand why it would be mentally challenging for him. But, you know, Chicago is a very interesting place, and in this last election, apart from Jesse Jackson Jr., there are two other black elected officials who won re-election. One, a judge in the circuit court, who actually was suspended. She went on a tirade and displayed rather erratic behavior and was made to agree not to come into the court without police escort. And her own attorney said that at the time that she apparently slugged a deputy, that she was not in her right mind. And her lawyers has assured the folks there in Chicago that she would be in her right mind if she takes her medication. Well, she was reelected. There was another person who was basically kicked out of the state house for alleged bribes that he received for basically trying to push through a state contract for someone, and he was kicked out of the house, but he's been reelected. And in a way, it is kind of a microcosm of what the African-American community is going through in many cases with respect to the caliber of leadership, but I don't think it's unique to the African-American community. It's just, you know, a basic across-the-board complaint that what is passing for political leadership these days is a little troubling, to say the least. And of course, Jesse Jackson Jr., I'm sure that they're going pretty tough on him, not only because, of course, of the immediate situation and the ethics charges that are confronting him now, but, you know, a lot of people are going to use this, and it's not without not outside the realm of possibility that his father, being Jesse Jackson, this may be a way for a lot of folks to do what James Brown called the big payback. You know, there are a lot of axes to grind. And in politics, a situation like this, in which the son is in a rather difficult situation, it sometimes, and you know, we have this Democrat-Republican tug of war, we have Chicago and whatever Chicago is, which is like most any other major city, you have people who have axes to grind. So that is coming to bear, no doubt, on Jackson's predicament. Just the same, you know, I think he should have addressed this problem with regard to his absence. I understand full well it's not illegal as the House goes. There are rules that allow a member of the House to basically be on medical leave indefinitely. So he's not doing anything extraordinary there. But as a matter of protocol, and considering that his district is a distressed district, it would have been a good thing for him to have addressed this sooner and not leave his congressional district in a lurch. There is going to be a special election next year, early next year, and I guess a whole bunch of people are now angling to see who will fill that seat. But that's the update on Jesse Jackson Jr. I want to turn my attention now to the topic of Hillary Rodham Clinton. And really what it is that she has gotten away, or is getting away, I think. I would just say it that way. She is getting away with not accounting as the Secretary of State for her role and her department's role in the Benghazi attack, in which 4 Americans were killed, including the U.S. ambassador to Libya. Now, I laid out the first part of this earlier, and I want to come to the other part of it because I want you to pay attention to how things are done. The focus is now on somebody who really should not be in the thick of this at all. The focus has shifted to Susan Rice, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. Now the fight is about her. And in an interesting way, it has become a very race-based war going on in Congress. And I'm tracing this, watching the evolution of it, but in the middle of it all, this is an absolute, this is Clinton-esque to the hilt. The idea of diverting attention away from where it ought to be trained, because I did say, if there's anybody who should have been an expert about the need for security at the consulates, the American consulates all over the world, it should be Hillary Rodham Clinton. In fact, she actually did say, I take responsibility. But it is interesting that even though she actually said it, nobody is interested in her actually being responsible for it. They are expunging her. And she has this, I mean, it's an amazing thing. It's a Teflon lady. Nothing sticks. She actually says, I'm responsible. And everybody's now fighting over the person they want to be responsible. The responsible person says, I am responsible. The person who shouldn't have to account for this at all is now being held responsible. How do you figure this? And now it's a big fight. And it now is supposed to cost Susan Rice an appointment as Hillary Clinton's successor. And it's now getting the Republicans fighting the president. And it's now getting into, why are you attacking the black woman? And you're not even trading your eyes on where the blame really lies. And we're not going to stand for that. This is where it's getting. But all of this is masking the fact that the person who isn't talking anymore is Hillary Rodham Clinton. And the person who needs to be under the lights, really bright lights, is Hillary Rodham Clinton. And in the heat of all of this, what does she do? She sees to her interests. She accompanies the president to Southeast Asia. She didn't have to go. He's a big guy. He can handle this by himself as president. But it was imperative for her to have all of that, you know, all of the press and all of the coverage to arrogate to herself because, hey, she'll be back. And then after that, flies out of Southeast Asia and goes to wreak a miracle between Israel and Hamas. And the way the media had been covering it, it is Hillary Clinton who just basically came through again and did a miracle of miracles. She got the enemies to sit down, the lions and the lamb, to sit down together. This guy, people wouldn't believe, they have people believing that Hillary Clinton did the deal. She sealed the deal, and it only took her, what, one day? The woman is just amazing. She should be president. And so we need to take a look at this, and this is how it's done. I did remind you that the reason that Hillary Rodham Clinton should be an expert at the need for security is that in 1998, when her husband was in office, we had two of the most devastating attacks on U.S. consulates, the most devastating, in Tanzania, in Dar es Salaam, and in Nairobi. So one would assume that with this knowledge, the first thing that you would want to bring to your job as Secretary of State is the idea, knowing that you are in charge of all these folks all over the globe, 275 U.S. Consulates and embassies, and with more than 60,000 diplomatic employees, this is the job for the State Department. But let's take a look at where things went this past weekend and how they developed. I want to talk about Representative Jim Clyburn from South Carolina, and he is reacting to a letter signed by about 100 members of the House of Representatives, and they are all Republicans, urging President Obama not to appoint Susan Rice. Let's take a listen.
Dr. Soledad, I just want to ask you just turn to the issue of Benghazi and the talking points that have now become a real political hot potato. The intelligence community admitted for the first time on the record last night that they, in fact, changed the talking points that Susan Rice used in the talk shows right after the attacks on 9/11 this year to take out Al-Qaeda and replace it with extremists. So there had been a big conspiracy theory that perhaps it was the White House or a political move. Is there a frustration there that the intelligence community has taken so long to admit that and kind of left Susan Rice hanging out on a limb?
I am a bit frustrated by that. I think that you recall the Vermont senior senator and Senator McCain went after Susan Rice in what I thought was an unfair way. I responded rather quickly that I thought that they were aiming their arrows at the wrong person. The fact of the matter is we all know that whatever requests were made for additional security, whatever went on before 9/11, it was all directed to the State Department, not the United Nations. And this had nothing to do with Susan Rice. Now we know from the testimony of Petraeus, as well as from what has just been said on last evening, that the talking points she was given, she absolutely read from the talking points. She didn't deviate from that. Now, if she had deviated in some way from the talking points, then they would have some issue with her.
I'm going to hop in because I'd love to hear the answer to Dana's question, which is, so then who are you frustrated with? Are you frustrated with the Republicans who seem to be going after Susan Rice? Are you frustrated with the intelligence community that kind of left her hanging out there? Are you frustrated with the 97 Republicans who have signed a letter now urging the president not to nominate Susan Rice for the Secretary of State position? All of the above?
Well, I guess all of the above. I'll just have to say all of the above. The fact of the matter is the expressions came from the senior senator from South Carolina and Senator McCain. That letter, signed by 97 people, was slated by Congressman Jeff Duncan, who is from South Carolina. So I have some personal feeling about this. I have said before that Susan Rice's father, Emmett, was born in Florence, South Carolina, the district, my congressional district. I knew him very well. He was just an outstanding person. Susan Rice is an outstanding person, and to have her sully it like this really frustrates me to no end. And I hate to see representatives from South Carolina, where her roots run deep, out in the forefront of this. It is just unseemly to me.
I want to read a little bit of this this letter. What they write is Ambassador Rice viewed as having either willfully or incompetently misled the American public in the Benghazi matter. Her actions plausibly give U.S. allies and rivals abroad reason to question U.S. commitment and credibility when needed. Thus, we believe that making her the face of U.S. foreign policy in your second term would greatly undermine your desire to improve U.S. relations with the world and continue to build trust with the American people. The Congressional Black Caucus incoming chair, Marsha Fudge, who you know well, says that she actually thinks that this is more about the fact that Susan Rice is a woman and that she's black. I want to play a little bit of what she said.
How do you say a person like Susan Rice is not qualified? You may not like her. You may not like the administration. But don't say she's not qualified. It is a shame that any time something goes wrong, they pick on women and minorities.
Come on now.
I have a real issue with that.
Would you agree with what she's saying, that there's a racial or sexist component to a lot of these comments? Or would you say, as the letter seems to say, they use the word incompetent and they use the word undermining the desire to improve U.S. relations?
These are code words. We heard them during the campaign. During this recent campaign, we heard Senator Sununu calling our president lazy, incompetent. These kinds of terms that those of us, especially those of us who were born and raised in the South, we've been hearing these little words and phrases all of our lives, and we get insulted by them. Susan Rice is as competent as anybody that you will find. And just to paste that word on her causes problems with people like Marsha Fudge, and it certainly caused a big problem with me. I don't like those words. It say that she was wrong for doing it, but don't call her incompetent. That is something totally different. a lot of very competent people sometimes make errors. And to say that she erroneously did it, I don't have a problem with it. But to call her incompetent, a PhD Rhodes Scholar, and being called incompetent by someone who can't hold a candle to her intellectually, by someone who said, and Senator McCain called her incompetent as well, but he told us that Sarah Palin was a very competent person to be Vice President of the United States. That'll tell you a little bit about his judgment.
Okay. That was Senator Jim Clyburn from South Carolina reacting on CNN. Now, what is interesting about that is what I have said before. This is a matter that typically, as he said, typically issues of this type would be within the purview of the State Department. Don't miss that. He's not calling Hillary Clinton's name, but he's saying what the chain of command typically is. These things typically are handled by the State Department. That's what the State Department does. The UN ambassador, the United States ambassador to the UN, handles other things, handles the United States' position within the world community of nations. I want to play for you now how Susan Rice reiterates the position. She clarifies the position once more in case people didn't get it. This is what she said.
Well, Pam, let me begin with the obvious. As a senior U.S. diplomat, I agreed to a White House request to appear on the Sunday shows to talk about the full range of national security issues of the day, which at that time were primarily and particularly the protests that were enveloping and threatening many diplomatic facilities, American diplomatic facilities around the world, and Iran's nuclear program. The attack on Benghazi, on our facilities in Benghazi, was obviously a significant piece of this. When discussing the attacks against our facilities in Benghazi, I relied solely and squarely on the information provided to me by the intelligence community. I made clear that the information was preliminary and that our investigations would give us the definitive answers. Everyone, particularly the intelligence community, has worked in good faith to provide the best assessment based on the information available. You know the FBI and the State Department's Accountability Review Board are conducting investigations as we speak, and they will look into all aspects of this heinous terrorist attack to provide what will become the definitive accounting of what occurred.
Okay. Now, I'm interested in the first sentence. She says she agreed to a White House request. They know that she's not the Secretary of State. They know better than anybody that she's not Secretary of State. A White House request. Why wasn't Hillary Rodham Clinton requested to make these statements? Why? Why would you, as a White House, whoever it is in the White House, and we need to find out who it was who made this request, and why, of the UN ambassador rather than the Secretary of State? That's an interesting question. The Secretary of State did not address this matter, and you may recall that that weekend, I mean, we saw Susan Rice's face all over the place. She was all over the television. They trotted her out and they made her say these things. They said, look, these are your talking points. She has no reason to doubt the veracity of the statements given to her. She says they were drafted. She relied, quote, solely and squarely on information provided her by the intelligence community. Okay. The Secretary of State is nowhere to be seen and not heard on this subject. The Secretary of State does not make the definitive statement as to what happened in Benghazi. There is a reason. We'll get to the reason just after this next piece of tape I want you to hear. And here is, as much as it hurt me to do it, but I did capture this from Fox News, Greta Van Susteren talking with Condoleezza Rice, the former Secretary of State. And she's asking, what would, if somebody's looking into this, as to what happened here, in as much as people want to know now, in a forensic way, what has happened, what would an investigative body look at? Here's Condoleezza Rice responding to Greta Van Susteren's question.
If you were investigating this, and you wanted to know what happened, would you look at an email trail, or what is sort of internal to our diplomatic procedures that you would look for?
Well, I think that the Accountability Review Board will want to look at what the embassy was communicating about the situation on the ground, what the State Department was doing in response to the communication about what was going on the ground, and not just what happened that particular night, but what signs there were of trouble earlier on, what did the intelligence picture look like, because you can't simply keep your diplomats in a bunker. They have to get out and do their work, but you want to make certain that you're taking the right safety precautions for them as well. And that's the kind of work that the Accountability Review Board will do. But there are protocols in place. I have no reason to believe that they weren't followed. But it is not very easy in circumstances like this to know precisely what's going on as it's unfolding.
All right, I want to ask you about the women vote, but one more question on Libya. I'm just sort of curious because I have no sort of sense. Yeah, for instance, let's take how many emails would you expect in a given day from a consulate in a troubled area? Just so I have sort of a universe. I realize that nothing is perfectly anticipated, but is it 10?
Right.
Is it 100? How big is the traffic?
Well, it would be a lot, and not just emails, but cables from the embassies as well, maybe even phone calls from the embassies. I'm quite certain that when circumstances like this are unfolding, there is a lot of information flowing in, and it's flowing in very rapidly. It's flowing in from multiple sources. And I want to emphasize again, Greta, one of the problems we had with 9/11 and that we sought to fix was the coordination between all of the various agencies that would have been reporting on something like this, the intelligence agencies back in Washington, the intelligence agencies on the ground, what was being reported from the Tripoli embassy as opposed to the consulate that was under attack. And we worked very hard to make sure that all of this was shared, put together in a way that policymakers could use it. Now, I think Chairman Rogers will want to look at whether or not this is indeed working, and we have to make sure that it's working, but that's really the question that's on my mind is how good was the coordination, and did all of those changes that we made after 9/11 really serve us well?
Okay, you've been on a campaign trail with the Republican ticket. I'm curious, there appears to be, at least the polls say, show a gender gap. The women vote, do you have a thought about this gender gap?
All right, well,
the polls certainly show
we got
a gender gap. But
Condoleezza Rice's response to the essential question of what would people look for, this Accountability Review Board, which is now studying what actually happened here. The Accountability Review Board is going to look, according to Condoleezza Rice, and she should know, she was a former Secretary of State, at the communication that was going on, not just at the time, which was good, she expected would be furious, fast and furious, lots of emails, because by the time the attack started occurring, even before it, when it looked imminent that all these people were gathering, there had to have been messages being fired from the consulate to any place that would normally respond to and report to. In fact, when Ambassador Stevens was found by the other diplomatic security people, they found the cell phone with him. So he was calling. He was telling somebody something. Now, where was the Secretary of State? What did she know? And when did she know it? I hate to ask the question. What did she know? And isn't it odd that we are not hearing from Hillary Clinton? Everybody has put the focus. It is Susan Rice is in the crosshairs. She clearly, I mean, it's so patently clear, it's almost insulting. It is very clear this woman was selected for a particular reason. What was that about? Who did that? Who selected her? And she agreed to go make these statements. She was given statements, these talking points, as they call them, to make. You go out, you talk about these things. This is typical of what happens in any situation that is sensitive. Rather than have the spokesperson stray, they confine what you're going to say and they script it for you so you don't, you know, wander off into dangerous territory and give information that you shouldn't give. So if you notice on the weekend that she made the circuit, she said essentially the same thing to everybody. So what is it that accounts for the fact, for the silence of Hillary Rodham Clinton? And why is nobody insisting that she needs to be heard from? How come? In fact, it is surfacing now that prior, months before the attack on the consulate in Benghazi, requests were made for beefed up security. And of the State Department specifically, requests were made of the State Department to beef up security because, number one, they're in Libya. It is a hot, hot place for anybody to be, let alone a diplomat. And they did ask for security, not once, but twice, at least by memo. They have come up with at least two instances in which a memo was sent urgently requesting beefed up security. And it was either ignored or denied. But in any case, it did not come through. That is Hillary Clinton's, that is her purview. That is her job. But there is, even in the midst of all of this, with four people dead, and the explosion of anger about it, and now it has become a political thing, it is now choreographed in such a way as to make someone see how, even in a situation like this, the racial issue is still there. The woman has said publicly, she said it, I am responsible. Well, yeah, well, let's leave it at that. Let's leave it that you're responsible. And now let's discuss how you are responsible. That should be the query. The query should be of Hillary Clinton come before this accountability review board and tell us how it is that you came to the conclusion that you're responsible. You had to have known, you had to have felt it because you said it. And in as much as you've said it, now take us through all of the things that we need to know that informed you, that brought you to the conclusion that you are responsible. But even in the aftermath of that, you notice she's saying nothing. And that is to protect her. That is yet another benefit that she has gotten at the expense of the truth. What is the truth? And the truth isn't to be gotten from Susan Rice. The truth is to be gotten from the person who heads up the department, whose job it is to account for the security of diplomatic personnel. Hillary Clinton has been allowed to go around the world traipsing all over the place and, you know, doing wonderful things with great political currency. She's taking care of Hillary Rodham Clinton, the brand. The heck with the president. That's not even important. And the heck with Susan Rice. You would notice that women, we just heard from the Congressional Black Caucus, headed by a female, and when she made this statement, she was surrounded by black women from the Congressional Black Caucus in support of Susan Rice, which means they recognize something is afoot. It doesn't smell right. And they're supporting a woman, Dianne Feinstein. The senator from San Francisco has made it clear that she objects to the tone of the attack on Susan Rice. Who is not talking about Susan Rice and offended that she is being raked over the coals as a woman is her fellow cabinet member. Not saying a word. She is not saying a word about Susan Rice. So much for woman power. So much for sisterhood. Hillary Rodham Clinton should be in the crosshairs right now. And her performance in this capacity, in this regard, ought to be gone over with a fine-tooth comb and in public. Have a public meeting. Have a public committee hearing. Let us hear how our Secretary of State takes care of 60,000 lives for which she is directly responsible. And as I said, she has the knowledge and the history of how important this is because, again, some of the most atrocious attacks against American consulates occurred during her husband's administration. And by the way, he did nothing about any of the terrorist attacks. It was within Bill Clinton's administration that we got to know the name Osama bin Laden. That was the first time we learned about him, was Bill Clinton's administration. The first time we heard about Al-Qaeda was in Bill Clinton's administration because they attempted an attack on the U.S. So we heard about it. They know about Al-Qaeda. They know about Osama bin Laden. Hillary Rodham Clinton is an expert on this. So that is the question. I have some time. I'll take a call, 1-888-874-4888, as we close out. I want you to watch this very closely to see how this is done. And Hillary doesn't care if a person who devoted all of those years to study, and you heard Congressman Clyburn talk about it, Rhodes Scholar, PhD on top of that, and this is what you do, and you allow this to go, and you say nothing? Thank you, sister. 1-888-874-4888. We have time for a call, and we'll take your call as soon as you come through. Hakeem, you're on the air from North Carolina.
Yes, I'd just like to say hello. I remember you from years ago. I remember one thing you always said, you have to read between the lines.
That's correct.
I'll never forget that. And I just wanted to say, I remember during the campaign how enthusiastic Bill Clinton was about campaigning for President Obama.
Right.
Because he's going to be looking for the same thing for Obama, President Obama, to do for Hillary. And he's going to be surprised because he's not going to get a lot of votes because I wouldn't vote for her.
Well, this is how Hillary Clinton is a study in political maneuvering. It's amazing. How she does it, I don't know, but people just literally clear the path and just let her through. And she's just going with it because that's what she wants. And it's all about what Hillary wants. And I'm upset about the fact that this is happening now in the open. They're not even hiding this anymore.
Oh,
and
yeah.
they still think people are stupid.
You know? They don't care. There's a 110% forward movement, and it doesn't matter who know about it anyway.
No, it doesn't.
But it's great you're back. I remember when Gary said you'd be there, and I said, wow, I wonder where she's been. You haven't been around for a while. And so, I know one day you'll have automatics on.
Oh, that's coming up.
That should be some program.
That's coming. Well, thank you, Hakeem. Good to hear from you. And that brings us really to the end of our program today. I brought this to your attention to let you see how these things are unfolding in front of us. They're not hiding this anymore. And it is now at the highest levels, and it's playing out. Not even with respect, not even with a sense of respect that you're serving a president and you ought to behave differently. You know, this is just not the way to go. So thank you so much for joining me today. And let's get together again on Monday. Have yourselves a very good weekend, and we'll see each other soon. Bye-bye.